You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave. Chris in the heart of Wisconsin. Dave under that big stainless steel arch in St. Louis. Talking about one of the more improbable and exciting Packers victories. 27-23. Packers with an incredible last second. In fact, not even last second. It was after time expired victory over the Detroit Lions a couple days ago on a Thursday night. So, Dave. But I got to ask you, do you think this is a turnaround game, the improbability of that kind of win coming from a 20-0 deficit, coming all the way back, getting a fluky penalty, the end of regulation, and then winning in an untimed play, does that turn things around for the Packers this season?
My inclination is to say no, because up – until that point, and for most of the game, I thought they still looked really terrible on offense. And there was a point in the game that we sort of forget about because of how the game ended, that in the first, second quarter, I mean, they were absolutely pathetic, where the running game is being given to a guy named, I'd still have to memorize his first name. Is it John Crockett?
I think maybe Davy Crockett.
John Crockett. That now he is starting our running back. The running backs that we had were fumbling or bobbling carries. James Jones is running patterns as if he's literally handcuffed to his receiver. I don't know who's covering who.
That first half James was a Jones. Farce. I mean, that's all I can say.
It was awful.
It was a 30 minutes of farce, and the Packers down 17-0 at the half. I really thought this was going to be not just a loss, but an embarrassing blowout.
Embarrassing blowout and sort of the end of an era kind of
right.
feel to it.
Exactly.
This is, and it was very, very disappointing. I want to come back to sort of all those things. But the only reason I don't say, no, listen, they got lucky, it was a fluke, and you know, next week they're going to struggle again, is that part of their struggle seems to be more than just execution and X's and O's, that there's a mental thing that's happening with this team that's got their confidence shaken. They got guys missing meetings who are being penalized, which I think is creating just sort of this black cloud over this team, that this team needed something like this. And if they're going to springboard into something decent for the rest of the year, I don't know if winning the Super Bowl is in the cards here. That has kind of been written off a while ago for me. But at least salvaging the season to be exciting at the end, that it's meaningful at the end. I think they needed something like this to fire them up. So it's possible that they could come back to at least being able to team that can beat the teams they should and maybe lose the teams they can't based on where their talent is and the injuries and everything that's happened. But that would, to me, would be a recovery from where they were, you know, for most of three quarters on Thursday night. But the other thing, too, that I keep forgetting about, because I can only think about one thing in this game, is this, how it ended. Is how healthy is their offensive line going to be come against Dallas? If they got 4 out of 5 of those guys out, much, you know, I'm sure they're all going to be dinged up in some way. That could be hard for them to win any game going forward. So we'll have to see. But man, I got to tell you, and I got to ask you, Because I know sometimes you watch on a delay. And
always. Always.
I watch other people sort of are in and out of games. If you're a Packer fan, I watch it from the second they kick off to the second it's over. There's no walking away. I don't do something else. In fact, in this game, I wouldn't let anyone else stay in the room. My wife and my daughter started the game with me, and I really think they wanted to show their support for me. And I literally kicked them out in about 8 minutes into the game. I did it by saying, look, I'm going to go watch it by myself upstairs, which was they got the hint that I wanted to stew in my anger by myself in the dark, and they left me alone. But one thing I did do is I watched the whole thing. I went through the whole roller coaster ride. I didn't turn it off early. And I really think you had to watch it from the very first second to very last, minus seconds, I guess. You're right. I didn't think interest rates could go negative, and they are in Europe. I guess you can also win football games after the clock is stopped, too. So strange times we're living in. I lived the whole thing. The anger to the apathy to the unbelievable ending that it was pretty cool to watch it. I found myself sort of laughing and almost just pure joy at the end that they won that game. It was just really, really unbelievable.
You know, I always DVR the game because I can't stand commercials. The only place I like commercials is during this podcast. Otherwise, commercials are absolutely worthless. Any commercial either in or associated with this podcast is excellent. Other than that, they should be entirely banned, but I know that would bring the whole broadcasting system down. So I watch it always. I start about an hour and a half late so I can kind of end the game in real time so I can run over to, you know, listen to what people are saying on the post-game show. And it was sweet this time around. I mean, there was just such exaltation. And I got to say, when they got the ball back with just, 20-some seconds, I think 23 seconds to go, and they got the non-pass interference call, which I think should have been pass interference on the pass.
Yes, absolutely.
I know the guy turned back, but he made contact also. And, most of the time, I think that's a PI call. But anyway, after that happened, I was, I got up out of the chair. I was standing in anticipation that the game was going to be over. And sure enough, they tried that ridiculous hook and ladder thing. And I thought that was it until I saw the flag. And I thought, flag for what? and then this sort of this phantom face mask thing, which I'll take, because there have been games. And I think back to the postseason game against the Cardinals and after the 2009 season where there was a blatant face mask on Rodgers, resulting in a fumble and the winning touchdown for Arizona. So this is maybe cosmic payback for that. And then they got payback for that Hail Mary that they got beat on against the Seahawks in 2012. So there were a lot of the affairs of the Corleone family were settled in this particular win. And it's amazing how a play like that, which I think is a fluke personally. I know Rodgers threw an amazing ball. That moon ball. It was better than a Tim Mastey punt, which I don't mean to damn it with faint praise, but really it had better hang time than one of Mastey's kicks, and certainly longer than one of Mastey's kicks. And the fact that they, had the thing scoped out, and Richard Rodgers does what he does best. He stood there taller than everybody else and made a sure-handed catch. The guy, the guy had a
really uncontested.
Yeah, I mean that was it. It wasn't even one of those, things where it was a couple people's hands on the ball and bouncing around and all that stuff. It was clean. It was clean.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how one play like that, which I'm going to put down as luck and as a fluke play, can just color the previous, certainly the first half farce and then some of the second half too. I mean, it was remarkable how all that kind of got stuffed away, flushed, put in the back, because now all of a sudden you've done a Lazarus thing and you've risen from the dead when you should have been dead and you won. And all of a sudden the world seems like a better place. But
right.
If you reflect back, I mean, there was some lousy play by the Packer offense. Defense, I'm not going to complain about the defense too much. I thought that they were pretty solid and certainly good enough to win. But the offense, man, I mean, it's just so many phases of the game were out of phase. I mean, that's maybe the only way I can really put that. They just aren't consistent. They aren't putting things together. And it's been going on like this now for, well, really since the bye, and maybe even the game before the bye. It just something is wrong, and I don't think a win like this is uplifting as it is for all of us and exciting and maybe one of the best finishes that I can remember seeing. That doesn't change the fact that this team's got a lot of problems, and they're going to be significantly challenged the last four games of the season. They stand right now third in the conference. They stand right now tied. We're doing this on a Sunday night, so the games are pretty much over. And the Vikings really got handed today by the Seahawks at home. I mean, the Seahawks blew them off the field. So the Packers are tied in terms of record but have the tiebreaker over the Vikings. So they hold the number three position right now with an 8-4 record. Oh, that sounds okay, and with four games left, you could see him probably winning two of those games, probably making it into the playoffs. But there's just so many things wrong with this team. It's really hard to imagine them putting together any kind of run that would make you think that they have any chance at all of making it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think that part has been left out, and it can only be up from here. If they lose all the rest of their games, I don't know if I'll be a little bit more disappointed than where I sit now, but I feel it's an early exit in the playoffs at best and not making it at worst. And some probably 50-50 in my mind is where that's going to land. The idea of them making it deep in the playoffs, winning a Super Bowl, that's just not in my mind. I can't imagine it's in anyone's mindset. You take this win, you talk about being a journey guy rather than a destination guy. Well, in 2015, I think it's going to have to be enjoy different parts of the journey. And first six games of the year was really fun. Beating Minnesota was pretty satisfying up in Minnesota and this game. So I think there'll be some things about 15 we'll look back and say, there were some high points and some very low points this season, but it was entertaining.
Did you mention the Seattle win?
Was right.
Yeah, I mean, that to me was very satisfying.
Oh, big time. And being San Francisco, I think, too. I don't think we knew how bad San Francisco really was going to be. I think beating them so close together was like your two demons were exercised at the same. So that makes a big deal. But the whole thing sort of started in hindsight when Nelson got hurt. There was kind of a gut punch when that happened that you kind of knew was going to be a bigger deal than what it was on the face of it. I mean, you figured, okay, we've got other receivers, and James Jones came back. He played really well. But I think all along, I think we realized, other than Clay Matthews and Rodgers, that that's the kind of injury you just really can't rebound from. And I think that has been a huge problem, obviously, for the entire year. But, I mean, this game was super fun. In terms, again, of trying to think of this from a broader context of watching – why do I watch sports or football or anything at all? I enjoy it. I watch it to enjoy myself. I mean, it's entertainment for me. That was a great 3.5-4 hours. I suppose there are some movies that have an ending that can catch me so off guard, like The Usual Suspects. I remember I got caught off guard that one. Sixth Sense. There's a few movies where the twist at the end was so surprising I just never saw it coming. I never saw this coming. And there is no way I thought they were going to win this game, especially once they started doing the hook and ladder or the laterals. Yeah. I mean, how dumb is it to ladder it back to your quarterback who's the last guy on the team? He's got no one to throw it back to. But that he got his face mask twisted. And I would have to say we should at least – there's been a lot of discussion on it. I've seen it in slow motion on Twitter, over and over and over again. I come down on it as I think with a lot of things in NFL, I think it was the right call. I think it was a ticky-tack inconsequential call that shouldn't be called, but I think as far as the rules are concerned, I feel like it was a fair call. What do you think? I mean, he hit the face mask. His head got turned. I think the momentum of his hand at a moment could have turned his face mask a little bit. I don't know. I thought it was, I feel like that's a call that shouldn't be made, but I think technically it's the right call. Where did you come up
with? The way I view it is that both of the calls we've referenced here in the first part of this podcast were technically the right call, But they should not have been called, both of them. Or the one, the pass interference should have been called, whereas I don't think they should have called the face mask. No, technically, yeah, by the rule, I think they were the right call in both instances.
Really? I don't know what the rule is on the pass interference by the very letter of the law. But
well, he was looking back. Okay, the defender's looking back. He has a right to go for the ball. The way I saw it, though, is he was looking back for the ball, and he ran into the offensive player who was also trying to make a play on the ball. And it seems like most of the time they're going to call that pass interference.
Right.
And they did not. But I guess, you know, as it was explained to me, the NFL, ref, I think, was it Mike Carey doing it this time? I think it was Mike Carey.
Yeah.
And also, you know, my son, who's kind of a wonk on the rules, said, yeah, I mean, that is technically not pass interference because the defensive back got his head around and he's going for the ball. Okay, maybe technically correct, but most of the time that play is called. Likewise, on the play that was called, I think technically, yeah, that was a face mask, but it was so inconsequential that to me it didn't rise to the level of you should throw a flag on that. My feeling is that had they called the first one like I thought they should, Packers would have been in field goal range. They probably win anyway on the field goal. So the outcome was as it should be. The way I guess we could look at it is that we actually got a little more excitement, you know, so as fans, we win not only the game, but we win having a more exciting outcome. The thing is, I would have been really supremely irritated had they lost that game because on that pass interference call that was not made.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. If I had my choice, I'd rather choose to win this way
because
that was, it was, I can't describe. There have been some games where we have won. I jumped out of my chair and screamed and went crazy. This one, I didn't do that. It wasn't that same kind of excitement. It wasn't a hard fought. You know, we won and it was a bomb that connected or Favre dove over the end zone on the last play. It was the unexpected part of it.
The surprise.
It made me
more
laugh than it did make me cheer, if there is such a – I mean, it's just the poor Lions, the way that whole thing ended on those back-to-back plays, it made me laugh more than anything. But it was a great laugh. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. But there's some things – I want to go back to what we talked about last podcast. I remember I gave you a few things I thought the Packers should do that would help themselves to win. And one was to have Jake Ryan play was my last one, and he did. And I thought he represented himself really well. What did you think of Jake Ryan?
Well, I kind of think that it's the Packers being revisited by the ghost of A.J. Hawk. I know a lot of people are excited about Jake Ryan, and if I got excited by a guy making a play, you know, after 4 or 5 yards, I mean, I would be excited about him. He doesn't play with the kind of energy, say, that a Clay Matthews does, where he's making plays
very few do
on the other side of the line. And so it's hard for me to get excited about a guy that, you know, when someone busts through the line, he's there to, you know, drag him down 4 or 5 yards. I guess that's better than having him run over you and having a safety make a tackle 8 or 9 yards down the field. But I'm not very excited about that guy. You know, he seems okay, but I don't think it's really an upgrade over what they had with A.J. Hawk, except that he's a younger version. He might get better. He's a rookie. I mean, there's always that possibility. But I'm not excited about him as a player.
Well, it's his first game, first start in the NFL.
Well, he came out a couple games ago, 3 games ago, right? I don't think he started, but he had 10 tackles, though. He led the team in tackles.
Yeah, I guess it was late, maybe the Kansas City game. But this was his first start. He was playing meaningful time. I don't know if the time he was in before
He had 10 tackles before, so he had...
Well, meaningful, I mean the game on the line.
Oh,
wasn't he in toward the end when the game was basically in the bag?
I don't think so. I think they got so frustrated with Nate Palmer, they pulled Palmer out, put Ryan in the game, and that's how he got all those tackles. But they were so nonplussed looking at the – I guess I used that word wrong. I guess they were not impressed, shall I say, when they looked at the game tape, and then he didn't see the field for 2 or 3 games. I mean, from scrimmage, anyway.
Well, I think, so his first start, at least, and you're right, maybe he's quite a few tackles were 3-4 yards down the field. But the defense is going to shine based on guys like Matthews, Clinton Dix, you know, those guys making plays. You need if Jake Ryan's role is to make sure, kind of take out the garbage, make sure you make the 4-yard tackle so in second and six and not second and eight or it's a first down. That's better than having someone be out of position. And and with Matthews being so unpredictable, I think you might need someone to be that offset. I just think, plus when I watch him play, I don't think you can say he kind of looks the same shape, but he certainly looks faster and a little bit more flexible.
Well, sure, he's younger than A.J. Hawk is, but he's...
But even at the beginning, I thought A.J. Hawk was so stiff.
Well, at this point in his career, Ryan's career, he's pretty much what they had with A.J. Hawk, except he's a lot cheaper, and he's younger, so he might get better. But really, he's doing pretty much what Hawk did before at this point. But, I mean, that all could change.
That could change. I'll just make the point. I just feel like he is – like A.J. Hawk having to stop, going left, go right, I think you could time that with a calendar. I mean, he was so stiff in his, you know, his ability to change directions. I mean, he was kind of a straight-ahead guy, and that was all he had. I think Jake Ryan is better than that, so I'm going to say that he is an upgrade to A.J. Hawk. But I think it's fair to say it's in the neighborhood. The other thing which I was really just perplexed about was – early in the game, the first thing they do is they came out with their three wide receiver set, Cobb, Jones, and Adams, with Rodgers tight end, one running back, same offense, same. I thought it was maybe the second series they had a penalty, but in that series they came out with Janis, Abadaris, and Cobb. I thought, and maybe they might have had a tight end, maybe there's a fourth receiver, but they had Janis and Abadaris on the field at the same time. Mm-hmm. They got a penalty. They threw a screen pass to Starks that worked great. They got a big play, but it got called back on penalty.
It was sitting with a face mask, yeah.
Okay, and then they had a third and long, and they threw it for Abadaris. He was just short. But Abadaris got – it was probably a 18-yard play. I probably have it right here. Let's see. It was the very first or second. It was third and 18, deep pass middle Abadaris for 16 yards or 2 yards short. After that, they didn't go back to that offense for the rest of the game. And I thought, you know, when Abadaris and Janis were in there, I thought they can get some separation. I thought this is going to be the start of their offense. Even though they punted, I was encouraged that they got a 16-yard pass play, and I thought they were going to stick with it, and they didn't. They went right back to Jones, Cobb, and Adams, and sure enough, doesn't Jones put a little ball go through his hands, and you get an interception, and it's now we're down 17-0. I don't know what's happening there. Why? One is they threw a deep ball to Janis that looked like he didn't run through.
Yeah, he looked like he pulled up to me.
He looked like he pulled up a little bit, but then what? Whoop! Janis never got thrown to again. So that guy is on the shortest leash of all leashes. What did they say?
I think
like,
Eddie Lacy might be on the shortest leash of all leashes.
Okay, so Janis, at least maybe it's Lacy's fault.
Yeah.
Janis, for some reason, they gave him one deep ball. Maybe they did that for the fans just to show you, all right, there, we gave him a deep ball, I didn't catch it, now shut up. I don't understand what they're doing with Janis, but they never went back to that lineup, and I really think that is something they should try to work on. I mean, they're not going to go very far in the playoffs. Why not give that a shot? I'm really tired of seeing the Cobb, Janis, and Jones combination. That's once again, this is a game where that didn't work. And I, as bad as Adams has been playing, as much as Cobb just confuses me why he's not playing better, I think Jones is awful. They isolated on him a few times. And I think every time they isolated him, he basically is running down the field. He does that often, running straight down the field, no cutting, no nothing, just runs down the field. And he basically grabs onto his defender and never – I mean, talk about no separation. I mean, they're like literally – hugging each other. I mean, he's out of the play whatsoever. I think Jones should not see the field at all for the rest of the season. I do not understand what they're seeing in him. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think I've seen a lot of the same things. In fact, when we were at the game, we kind of noticed that Jones, but also, you know, the rest of the guys just kind of were like running with their guys. I mean, they weren't able to get separation. That seemed to be the thing that the Packer receivers generally, you know, were having difficulty just parting from their guy.
Now, but it's more than just difficulty separating. It's that they're not even trying. I mean, like when he's watching Jones, he's running straight with his guy and never making a move at all. I mean, one thing if they're trying, like I just saw the I was watching the Jets play the Giants, and Marshall broke out from his, you know, from the line of scrimmage, kind of pushed off his guy and cut to his left, and he's able to get in front of his defender and cut, and they threw it to him for an 8-yard gain. Boom. Pretty straightforward play. I mean, Jones is never even doing that. He's not cutting. He's not moving. I don't see him doing anything to get separation or even try.
It's unclear to me what they're supposed to be doing. Is he running a clear out of some kind to just, you know, create space for somebody else? And so when they're isolating on him, he's not a part of the play because he's not supposed to be. I mean, I thought, yeah, anyway, that all those guys were supposed to, you know, be trying to get open, but maybe that's not a complete understanding of the offense. I mean, maybe some of the job of, you know, one receiver is to run guys off so that there's an opening for somebody else. I'm not exactly sure how that works.
Well,
but,
that's what it looks,
yeah,
like.
I mean,
that's
because it doesn't look like he's – I hate to say it because, again, you know, when you don't know, you shouldn't criticize, but it looks like he's not trying, you know.
Right.
That's what
right.
it looks like. But I wouldn't think they would keep him on the field if he wasn't trying. I mean, he must be doing what they want him to do. But it, just to the layman, it doesn't appear as though he's making a real serious effort to get himself open. But obviously that can't be the case because, why would a coach allow that to happen? So
yeah.
It's very perplexing when it seems like none of those guys are doing a lot to, you know, get themselves open. And they must have been doing something in previous years because, you know, Rodgers was hitting guys left and right, you know, 7, 8, 9 guys in the game and, you know, completing, you know, 25, 28 passes, you know, a game. So guys were getting open enough, but now it just seems it's a struggle to find anybody, and they've become a team that relies on the screen pass. And they, you know, and I was thinking when I was watching screen after screen after screen that you must have been delighted seeing all the different ways that they're trying to get guys open on screen passes, you know, tight ends and wide receivers and running backs and everyone. You know, I mean, they're trying really hard on that screen because nothing else is working well for them.
Yeah, I guess when you see it as much as they're doing it, then you think it's not working as well because – one of the nice things about screens is you catch defenses when they're not expecting it. And when teams used to play two safeties deep and they would, you know, rush 4 or 5 and play man-to-man everybody else, I thought a screen play would work great because you got the safeties pretty far and you've got your corners have their backs to the quarterback. But now it seems like teams are expecting it. So it actually worked decently. I mean, in the second half, if you'd have told me this, I wouldn't have remembered. But here's how the half after halftime it played out is the Lions got a field goal, Packers scored a touchdown. Lions got a fumble, Packers scored a touchdown. Then punt. Then Lions got a field goal, touchdown for the Packers, punt, and then touchdown at the end. I mean, the Packers were fairly successful in the second half of the game.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's what I think they did most of their screen passes. So I think that is the best that they have, but if they do it week after week after week, you're going to see where the linemen can see it, sniff it out, and all of a sudden the linemen aren't rushing the quarterback anymore. I mean, that's when you know you got to now try something different. And I feel like they're on the verge of overusing that screenplay. And I wish they could just throw it to receivers who – I mean, I'm watching the red zone today, and I'm watching team after team on there. I mean, wide receivers are open once in a while on other teams. Our team – it seems like they're never open.
It's just a struggle. It's a struggle every single play.
So strange.
Yeah.
So strange.
You know, you mentioned earlier on something we probably should mention because it could be a key the last quarter of the season, and that's this offensive line situation. And I know that Bakhtiari came back into the game after, you know, Josh Walker gave up that sack on the stunt that was run by the Lions. But it just calls to mind the fact that, yeah, I think they probably can get their normal 5 guys out there, but it seems like most of them, if not all of them, are going to be limited. And that, I think, is a big problem with the Packers offense generally. I think a lot of guys are playing, but they're not themselves. They're not playing up to their capabilities. And I even think that there's something up with the quarterback. I know that he ran, you know, for that 16-yard touchdown, looked pretty good, but did his gait look right to you? I mean, he didn't look as He didn't look very smooth or graceful to me.
I don't think he ever has, though.
Yeah,
healthy.
No, that may be. Now, maybe I'm looking for something that's not there, but he, you know, I mean, it was great that he was able to convert that, and it was a manly effort indeed. But he just didn't look to me like he was 100% healthy, and it reminded me of what I heard in the off season about the calf injury, and apparently, even though his calf no longer had pain, there was still a knot in it, and his calf was misshapen, and I'm wondering if, you know, that thing didn't heal improperly. And it limits him in some ways. Now, it didn't limit him on that, you know, that rainbow he threw for the touchdown. But I'm wondering if that might not affect his ability to, you know, plant his feet, or just the whole confidence idea that, you know, he knows he's not completely right, and so he gets a little happy in the pocket. He's looking more quickly. It's not so much he doesn't trust his receivers, although that might be true. He might not trust his own body. And if you overlay the fact that he has had some shoulder problems this year, enough to be on the injury list for a while, I'm not sure if that 12 is altogether physically 100%. And that might be part of the problems why he's continues to miss some guys low. He did it again this week. And even on the interception, while I think it should have been caught by Jones, it was probably, you know, a foot higher than Rodgers would have wanted it to be. So he's a little bit off, and it just makes me wonder if there's something going on with him as well as the offensive line. I mean, those guys are playing, but I don't think any of them are playing like we expect them to. I mean, Bulaga is a shell of himself when he is playing. Lang didn't even play this time around, and Bakhtiari had to lead the game. They had to shuffle back in Treader this time around because Lindsley couldn't go. I mean, that's going to be a confidence factor for the quarterback as well. If he knows, and he knows better than anybody else, that, you know, four of his guys are playing hurt, it's going to make him probably rush his throws and be looking for pressure before it's there. I think all these things are related.
I think so, too. I have two things that I thought about there. One is I think Rodgers, I'm sure he's dinged up as every guy is, but I think the major injury is in his head. I think he doesn't have confidence in his running backs or his line and his receivers. I mean, all three facets of the offense, I don't think he trusts, and that's making him play worse. You know, whether it's not throwing as quickly or maybe throwing too fast, whatever it is, I think most of it's in his brain. Otherwise, you know, at the end of the game when they won, he sprinted down the field pretty well. I mean, I think if it's a calf problem, even on a celebration like that, I think you probably are hugging more at the 50-yard line than running into the end zone like he did. But maybe not. Maybe the adrenaline's so great that you just, you know, he pays for it later. And the other is when he threw that ball, there can't be anything wrong with his right shoulder. I mean, that throw was just unbelievable. The other thing I think about the line is I think it shows how stubborn either Rodgers or these coaches are, that when they had four out of five linemen out, the play that they called was a five-plus drop back. I mean, they didn't do something, a wide receiver screen. I mean, they just ran their play. I think they literally feel that next man up philosophy means that they should be able to run whatever it is that they want to run without any idea who's actually playing the game, I think is really idiotic. He could have really gotten hurt on that play. I thought he got hit hard. And I was just surprised that, I mean, everyone in the world, I think, saw that, oh my gosh, Bakhtiari's now down. Who was going to play offensive line? And what was the play that they called? He dropped back, you know, let them run their 10 to 20 yard routes, and he got plastered. This coaching staff is not adjusting to how things are going with this team at all. But now, like you said last week, they have almost a mini bye. They have a Thursday through next Sunday where they can kind of plan with what they got. And hopefully the offensive line will get a little healthier, because I didn't hear of Ted's going out and signing anybody this week so far.
Well, they brought in Monte Ball for a tryout.
That's interesting.
I mean, Eddie Lacy.
But he doesn't play offensive line.
No, no, but there's really something obviously going on with Eddie Lacy. And I know you're an Eddie Lacy guy, but, you know, from the time they drafted him, we started this discussion. This is a guy that, you know, I think he likes to play football, but I don't think he really cares about football that much. And I'm wondering if we aren't seeing some of those habits kind of spilling over now into his off-the-field stuff. I mean, the fact that they capped, I mean, they just got rid of Harris right away, and then they, you know, penalized Lacy by not having him play in the first quarter.
Because Harris was also late, right?
Well,
it was Harris and Lacy?
Yeah, I mean, it gave me the sense as though they don't bench you like that, I think, unless you have a history of this stuff going on. And you remember when we were at the Lions game, you know, Dr. Klaus pointed out right away, hey, Lacy's not, you know, in, he's not even dressed. I'm wondering if this hasn't been going on for a while. I wonder if it's not his on-the-field performance as much as it's the off-the-field stuff. The fact that they just got rid of, I mean, on the day of a game, on the morning of a game, they cut Alonzo Harris, just got rid of him. So this couldn't have been a first-time deal that they're, you know, missing curfew. This must be a habit that's going on. So Lacy, I think, he's got so much to play for this year. I mean, forget about the Packers record. I mean, the guy's in his third year. You know, he's coming up on, you know, a new contract, and this is just for self-preservation. You know, if he doesn't play for the Packers, he'll play for somebody, and he's not going to if this is what he's going to show. So forget about loyalty to the team and all that stuff. This is a guy, I mean, he's laid back, and, his scale says he's cool. You know, I mean, that's all fine. This is a guy that it just makes me wonder what kind of a competitor he is. I'm sure he likes to play, but as you know, I mean, I like to play golf. I don't like to practice golf, and so I'm lousy when I play. I'm just wondering if that's the deal with Eddie Lacy. That it's great when he can suit up and play the game, but other than that, he doesn't really have that thing inside of him that wants to make him excel. And, you know, I mean, 5 carries and 4 yards this time around, getting benched because he's not making curfew. That doesn't sound to me like a guy who's really committed to it. And I know people will point to Paul Hornung and Max McGee and Mark Tremura and some of these guys from the past. But as far as I can tell, those guys like to play football. Eddie Lacy doesn't really seem like he's kind of indifferent about it. You know, it's okay, but it's not really animates him. So that's troubling to me when, you know, looking forward and thinking about the running game, thinking about Monte Ball or whatever else they're going to do, John Crockett or Davy Crockett or whomever else they're going to play. Certainly James Starks doesn't seem to be the long-term answer, although he does fumble well into the end zone.
Did you see the movie Alamo?
Well, Davy Crockett was there. So I think Jim Bowie was there too.
Well, yeah, in the movie Alamo, there's a scene where Davy Crockett goes up on the wall and plays his fiddle while the Mexican army is playing whatever song they're doing before they bomb the Alamo.
Oh, so this wasn't about the rental car company?
This was the don't you remember the Alamo in San Antonio?
I forgot the Alamo.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it just made me, when you keep talking about Crockett, that's one of my favorite scenes in movies.
Did they all go down by the Riverwalk then and have lunch at one of the cafes?
No, this was much earlier than before the Riverwalk.
Right.
But if you know the movie Alamo, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's a great scene. But anyway, I had another football point,
okay.
Yes, clearly something's going on with Lacy, but why is it having an impact on the running game? Is it possible that Lacy is just being a lazy jerk, coming in late, whatever it is he's doing, partying, or, you know, he and Alonzo are just having a great time, got back late. And coincidentally, also, the passing game is pathetically bad? Or is it all related?
You know, I think it might be of one piece. But I want to be clear. I'm not saying he's a jerk.
Lazy, yeah, I guess,
he might be lazy, but I don't think he's a jerk. He's probably a great guy. But, you know, I mean, I know you played some sports, and I played some sports at one point. I knew a lot of guys who were great guys, but they didn't really, you know, they didn't really necessarily play hard. I mean, they liked playing, but it wasn't really anything that they were really driven to do. And they had talent. I mean, Lacy's got a hell of a lot of talent. But, you know, at some point when you're taking the kind of pounding an NFL running back does, I mean, that could ruin anybody's enthusiasm for the game. You know, I mean, especially if you don't have a burning desire to do something, and when you do it, you're getting the crap kicked out of you, that's going to take your enthusiasm down a notch because your life is multifaceted. You like Japanese anime, which is what he does like. And, you know, you're an easygoing, laid-back guy, and you're not getting as much reward out of the playing of the game because you get punished physically. I mean, to play football, I think you have to be able to really want to do this thing because it takes such a physical toll on your body. And if you really don't want to do it enough that you're willing to accept the punishment that goes with it, I don't think you're going to be very good at it very long. And I'm just wondering if that's where Eddie Lacy is going right now.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe James Jones is looking at it and saying, hey, if those guys aren't going to try that hard, then, you know, I'm just going to dog it in practice too. Or if a couple guys are joking around, you know, during meeting time, and that's causing other guys like Cobb or someone to like joke around too, and there's just a culture of not taking things very serious, I don't know, that would make it related. Otherwise, this is just kind of a snake-bitten team. You've got a guy not taking it seriously, you've got receivers who can't get open, and your offensive line is getting hurt. I suppose they could be related in some way, or they could be just three completely indirect things that just happen at the same time, and that's how you can take a really good offense and make it a really bad offense.
Well, it also could be you got a quarterback that's pretty critical of his teammates. And, you know, again, when you're playing a hard game, a physical game, and, you know, you're out there trying as hard as you can, you make a mistake, and then you get, you know, that you get the look from 12, or you get those gestures from 12. You know, I mean, that could be a part of it too, you know, that you're struggling, you're doing the best you can. I mean, you're James Jones, you're 32, you didn't have good speed to start with, you can't get separation, and the quarterback throws the ball high, it goes through your hands, and then it's your fault. You know, I mean, that can't be uplifting when a team is struggling. I mean, even, you know, Lombardi knew that. I mean, he was hard on the guys when they won, and he took it easy on them when they lost because it was hard enough. And I don't know if, you know, Rodgers being critical of his teammates as much as he is and as visibly as he is, you know, maybe that feeds into this cycle of people not being able to elevate their games because it's a lot of negative reinforcement that they're getting. I don't know about you, Dave. I've always been very hard on myself, and I didn't need someone to, you know, get down on me when I did something bad. You know, I needed somebody to kind of, you know, pick me up a little bit. And that isn't Rodgers' game. I mean, he's, you know, he's tough on those guys. He's brutal.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And it clearly is something. I think there's definitely a physical problem, the injuries from Nelson, injuries on the offensive line. But we'll never clearly know what the problem is. It's kind of coming out little by little. Now you're hearing about Lacy missing meetings and getting suspended or getting his carries limited. But there is definitely a mental side of this problem that we may never hear or just it'll trickle out over time. And, you know, what we'll find out is in the off season is who stays and who goes.
Because I
think McCarthy's not going to keep his job very long catering to guys that aren't playing that hard or there are distractions. And, you know, I think Rodgers is going to be talking, whoever he has to, Ted or Mark Murphy or whoever, they're going to see a bunch of guys gone next year that were the real problems. So
I think we won't see that, though, until the off season. I mean, it's going to be very telling to see what they do, who they re-sign, not so much on the defensive side of the ball, but I think on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, character, I think, is revealed when there's a time of challenge, and losing Jordy Nelson and having the injuries they have, I think that's put the character, you know, kind of on front and center.
Well, should we take a break? Speaking of not caring,
Before we take a break, I want to ask you one more thing.
Oh, okay.
Where has this Richard Rodgers guy been? The one that we saw on Thursday night. Where's he been? I mean, before he made the catch in the end zone, he had a great game. I mean, he had seven targets, seven receptions before the 61-yard touchdown at the end. I mean, the guy was getting yards after the catch. He was getting open. He catches anything that is that his hands can get on. Where's that been from this guy? Was it just maybe a favorable matchup? I'm not sure what it was, but this is a tight end that they can win with.
Yeah, I agree. I think I remember thinking early in the season that he was going to be a real player. I think we were really complimentary toward him. Mm-hmm. And we said he's big. He's got hands that are just huge. He catches everything. But then he sort of slowed. He's morphed into this Bubba Franks kind of guy. And then also what frustrated me is when they're running him as the fourth receiver, when the other three can't get open, Richard Rodgers, even he said himself in the postgame, he's not the fastest guy in the world. You know, he's the kind of guy that's got to sit down in open space and throw him the ball, and he gets you a first down once in a while. He's not one of these dynamic tight ends that some of these teams have. But, you know, I clearly he can catch the ball, it seems, if it's in his area. So I don't know. Maybe this will be a real booster for him. I mean, he's been taking some heat from us, from everybody. I mean, I know from other podcasts like Jason Wilde and everything else, before this week was saying they basically have nothing at tight end.
Right.
And they did. They were going to Perillo and you know, Perillo didn't get any tosses, but I think he lined up some.
Mm-hmm.
So they were definitely experimenting. And I thought in the game against Detroit in Green Bay that we were there. I don't have a good feel for that game because we were at the game. But I thought that's maybe Rodgers' low point because Perillo played a lot in that game and had a lot of catches. But, you know, maybe this is something they can work through. Maybe because teams are focused so much on the three receivers, the tight end can get open, and maybe you need to force feed those guys some more throws. I don't know. I'm not ready to say he's the answer because it wasn't but a week ago that I thought he was the problem.
Yeah, well,
but,
you know, this was a different guy. I mean, and they seemed to be even using him differently where they were getting him the ball on the move and he was turning it upfield. I mean, he didn't look at all like the writer of Broadway musicals. I mean, he looked like a guy who could actually play in the NFL and play tight end, which there had been no indication before that, you know, he was going to be able to do that. It must have been a favorable matchup where he was able to get separation and be able to run a little bit once he got the ball. And now Wilde, of course, won't be able to use his favorite stat that he likes to quote, that the most yards that a tight end has gotten for the Packers was 76 yards from Jermichael Finley in the game in which he got injured. And that was like 2013, and Wilde kept on coming back to that again and again and again. Well, now he won't be able to with Rodgers going way over 100 yards, and I think he even had like 85 yards before that final 61 yards.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's all good. That's encouraging. Got that monkey off their back. I just don't know if I can trust it. It might have been a fluke. It might have been as fluky as the win. Richard Rodgers, may have been a metaphor for the Packer win, you know, just a fluke.
You know, they need something. But it's still, they threw the targets for Rodgers was 8. Starks was 7 with all the screens. Devontae Adams also had 7. And Randall Cobb, their best pass catcher, 5. I don't understand how they're not getting Cobb more involved in that offense.
Well, I think they're doubling Cobb. I think everyone knows he's their best receiver. And he always plays out of the slot. Unless they put him in the backfield, but they don't ever play him outside, and I'm sure there are reasons for that. I don't know what they are. He's not a big, tall guy or anything, but I'd like to see him, you know, moved around a little bit more than having him do slot or running even out of the backfield to get him more involved in the offense in different ways. Because I think he is their best pass catcher, but they don't really seem to, you know, give him opportunities other than those two positions. They never seem to put him outside the numbers.
They do what they do, Chris. They do what they do, and they're not going to change unless they maybe a bye off season. But I don't know. This may be all they can come up with for the rest of the year.
Well, that's a shifting narrative. You know, I mean, people like Bill Johnson on is it 540, the ESPN Wisconsin, always talks about, and he comes back to this again and again, and you even use the word stubborn to describe the Packers. But, you know, the narrative on that shifts because, you know, when people are stubborn, that can be viewed as a great strength. Winston Churchill was stubborn. He was defiant. He did it his way, and he prevailed. You know, when, you know, there were hard times for this team or that team, but they persevered. You know, they were stubborn. They were resolute. You know, so there's one narrative. And then the other way to view stubborn is, well, you know, you're not flexible. You're not willing to change. You're not willing, you know, I mean, right now, because they are struggling, it's the latter narrative, you know, that somehow they're stubborn. It's a negative thing. But when a team wins, you know, and they're stubborn, it's viewed as being a strength because they are strong enough to stay with what they know who they are, regardless of the circumstances. And when they win, it's because they persevered and stay with their character and who they are. So I'm not sure whether I think they are stubborn, but I'm not sure if that's a negative or a positive.
Well, you know what they say the greatest strength of our Constitution is, right?
Let me think, because it's written on parchment paper?
Because it's stubborn. It's unlikely to change. No, that's able to change, that you can adapt with the times. And boy, this team really needs to adapt to something. I actually think on offense we may see something different against Dallas. I think they, given more than a week's time, I think the Sunday to Thursday was too short for McCarthy to kind of do something different. And they had a few wrinkles, just a few. I think that against Dallas we might see a few more. And I wonder if we'll get Abadaris and Janis on the field at the same time a couple more times. I would like to see them do some running plays with Rodgers under center. I thought that every single running play that they ran against Detroit, I could be wrong, but every one that they ran – which they ran, I guess, carries 20 times because four was Rodgers. Right. Every time it was out of the shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the shotgun is not – it's basically a draw play every time. And draw plays work when you're not expecting it and it kind of mix it up. But when it's your only play, you're not giving backs a chance to get ahead of steam ahead of
them.
They
run out of that pistol a lot too, where you have the running back – The quarterback's in the shotgun or a short shotgun, and then he got the running back behind him. They do that a fair amount too. I'm not crazy about that formation either. I would like to, I guess, see them do more power running. And when Lacy's in the game, at least, I mean, that seems to be his strength. When they run out of that I formation, quarterback under center, a fullback in front of him, that seems to be where he excels.
I mean, Kuhn. Right now, they can't run that play where third and one, they give it to Kuhn real quick, and you think it's going to the running back behind because they're never lined up in that formation. Well, they haven't been probably first and goal on the one in a long time, but, you know, they I'm just trying to think of a time when they haven't run that play in a long time because they're constantly running shotgun, and I think it's a mistake. I think this team should lean more on the run and focus, although I don't think their offensive line is perfect for it, but I think the fullback, I think the running back is more catered toward a fullback, running back, line up under center, give them the ball, especially against these teams like Detroit and Chicago. Those were two teams you could have ran down their throat, but they don't do that. They are stubborn. I think that stubborn, well, the results are what is the proof, and I think they're being stubborn to a fault right now. But we need to take a break. We may be talking all over ourselves right now. We are 52 minutes into the podcast.
52 minutes? Incredible.
Yeah, that's awful.
Boy, it is absolutely amazing. Well, we are going to take a break because we have to stop the recording and recalibrate it and start it up again. You know, if we had a sponsor in this podcast, we could probably get better software. But no, we can't do it. Why? We don't have a sponsor. This podcast available for sponsorship. Anyway, it's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave. We'll be back in just a sec to talk a little bit more about the Packers and Lions and also give you your betting lines. We'll have it for you right after this. It's more Packers Therapy with Chris and Dave. And as promised, Dave, let's get to the betting lines right after the break for a change. I know a lot of people look for that, and we usually string it out toward the end. But let's get to that straight off. First off, who was our winner to get a fabulous week in the comfort of the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino? Who do we have this time?
The winner is Jared Madden, who I wonder if he's related to John.
Is he a famous football coach?
He might be. Right? Or Jared, I think, has a very successful video game as well.
Nicely done.
So Jared Madden won with five correct. There are a few others with five, but you know the casino would have five, a lot of fives going on. Five people in the room this week if we didn't change our rules to have a tiebreaker. So Jared, you do not have to share the room with Mike Miller, Tom Glassell, Jeff Tum, and Matt Krenz. You can have it all to yourself and the masseuse that we send up there around 10 o'clock at night. So you can enjoy that, but let me go through the results so you know exactly what happened here. Number one, how many targets will Jeff Giannis receive? You said the over-under was 4.5. I took the under because they're stubborn. They do what they do, and he had one target. And I thought it was going to be so much more when they threw him the bomb early. I thought they're going to try and get Giannis involved in the game. This is going to be interesting. And that turned out to be his only chance. Poor Giannis. Number two, how many touchdowns will Calvin Johnson have? Now Charles Johnson, as I often call him. You said 1.5. I took the over, and it was the under. He had just one touchdown, which was, I thought, part of the story of the game that's overlooked is I thought Sam Shields played Calvin Johnson pretty well.
This is Shields. He's had three games in a row now where he's not only covered well, he's made some very solid tackles. Sam Shields quietly having a very good season.
Very good. I mean, Calvin had three catches for 44 yards, caught the touchdown, but, man, having Megatron down to the three catches is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating. You set the line at 86. I took the over, and he did do better. He had 96.2.
Yep.
So that was correct. How many interceptions will Green Bay – I think this is how many interceptions will they have. They actually intercept, not how many will Aaron Rodgers throw. You said half. I took the over, and they had no interceptions, not a one.
Brilliant line.
Very well done. I thought Stafford – had a pretty good game, and the throw he made on that third down play almost toward the end of the game, that should have been a signature play that won the game for them.
Yeah, it was a great throw. Yep.
It was sort of reminding me of Rodgers and Jennings in the Super Bowl play. It's a great throw, great play.
I think it was Quentin Rollins who almost got his hand on it, but
yeah,
not quite. It reminded me a lot of that play to Greg Jennings on third down, fourth quarter Super Bowl.
Number five is how many sacks will Detroit have on the Packers? You said 2.5. I took the over, and that was correct. They had three, which is another good line, Chris.
Very good, Chris. Excellent.
Number six, what would be the average per carry on Green Bay running downs? You said 4.1 because they were coming off a very high average the week before. I took the under, and that was correct. It was 2.8.
I got a lot right.
Brutal.
I don't know
how
that's
it. And then number seven, will they actually show or speak about the relax? And I thought they would do that. A lot of people said no. I said yes, which cost me the tie. I don't remember them ever talking about the relax.
I don't think they did.
I think they went just right to panic the whole time. And then the tiebreaker, what was the longest Giannis kickoff return? The high, someone put down 101 was the high guess. The low guess was zero because I didn't actually make a guess. And
nice job.
The closest was Jared, who said 20. And looking through here, let's see. What was the – Jeff Janis's long was 24. So of the five, he was the closest at 20. So Jared has the keys. They'll be under the mat. And good luck. In the room by yourself. Are you ready for this week?
Yes. I want to tell people right away that if you want to play the betting lines, which I'm about to set with Dave's help, you send them to our friend Mike Miller. His email address is mitnomiller@gmail.com. That's mitnomiller@gmail.com if you want to play the betting lines with us. And, Dave, what are the lines for the week coming up, the game against the Cowboys?
All right, number one, got to throw this out right away, is how many catches do you think Richard Rodgers will have? Will he be targeted more than normal? He was targeted and caught eight balls this time. Is that going to be a trend? What do you think?
Well, I don't know why it wouldn't be unless they don't like the matchups that they have. Dallas's problem is on the offensive side of the ball. They're without your homeboy, Tony Romo. So that's going to be a factor for them on that side of the ball. But defensively, I think they're still pretty good. I'm trying to think, how will they match up against Rodgers? I don't think he's going to get eight this time, but I think he's going to be their number one tight end. I don't know if Corliss comes back or not this week. But I'm going to set – now, are we talking targets or actual catches?
Catches.
Okay,
I'm sorry,
actual catches. I'm going to set the line at 3.5.
3.5. I think he'll get 4, so I'm going to take the over. I don't think much more, but I'm going to go with the over on that. Number two, how many – I'm going to have to remember this guy's name now. How many carries – no, back it up. How many yards will John Crockett have, rushing yards?
Well, that is assuming he will be active for the game. Don't know if Eddie Lacy will be in the doghouse or not. James Starks probably is delighted that Eddie Lacy is in such trouble, because otherwise the spotlight would be on him and his fumbling that he's
fumbles. Yeah.
I think you're going to see more of Crockett, because I think there's a little suspicion right now about James Starks. I mean, it worked out okay with the fumble going for the touchdown, but I think yardage for Crockett, he had, what, 22 this past week and 5 carries? Am I remembering that right? I think
that's correct.
Let me see. I'm going to put his yardage, put the over-under at, I'll put it at 28.
28. You know, I'm going to take the under. I'm predicting, well, I'll go on the next one. Number three is, how many attempts will Lacy have? And this is asking that very question. Do you think Lacy is in the doghouse to stay there, or did he sort of get religion and kind of face up? And I think their best chance of beating Dallas is to run the ball with Lacy. And what was it, 2 weeks ago, he looked great. So how many attempts do you think Lacy will have?
I'm going to put the line at 11.5.
All right. That's a good question, because even if he plays full time, I don't know if he gets 11.5. I'm gonna actually take the over. I think he's in the doghouse, but when they're losing, they can only go so far, and I think they need this game against Dallas. I think they do more Lacy this game than this last week. Number four, how many sacks will Matthews have? He is due. This guy, I thought early on, I actually tweeted, I said it's fun watching the ghost of Clay Matthews play out there. I mean, he was there. He got washed out on so many plays. I mean, it looked like he was a shell of himself. So this guy really needs to show up. Like, he had 3 tackles, 2 solo, no sacks last week. So very pedestrian. How many sacks do you think Matthews will have?
I think he's been playing hurt. It seemed like he hurt his thigh. Maybe the middle of October. I think his last sack might have been like the 11th of October, something like that. So the guy's gone 6 weeks now, going on 2 months without a sack. He's not been himself, and I don't think he's 100%. But the longer the time goes, he's due. So I'm going to put the sacks for this is just sacks, not tackles, correct?
Correct.
I'll put the sacks. I think he's going to come back. The quarterbacking situation's not great for Dallas right now. I'm going to put it at 1.5.
All right, I'm going to take the under. And the reason for that, I looked at the Carolina-Dallas game, and, you know, Carolina's playing great. And they played partly with Romo and then partly with Matt Castle. I thought they probably had like 4 or 5 sacks. They only had 2. So I think the defensive – Dallas's offensive line is pretty decent. So I think he's probably more or less, if he gets 1, that'll be kind of where he's at. So I'm going to take the under. Number 5, Jake Ryan. How many tackles will he have, seeing he had 10 this week and he's player on the rise?
He had 6 this week, I thought.
6 solo.
6 solo, okay.
10 total.
10 total, and he had 10 the last time he played. A good amount. So he's around the ball, just that he's around the ball after they've, you know, gotten a first down. Last time he had 10 tackles, he didn't play a single snap from scrimmage. But I'm thinking that this time it's going to be harder to ignore him. I'm going to put his let's put his tackles at 7.5.
Oh, I'm taking the over. I think that's an easy one.
All right.
I think this guy's a lock for 10 every week.
All right.
Number six. I put this down even though it's kind of a bland one, but how many points do you think Dallas will score? They got the new quarterback. They're going to be in Green Bay. It's probably going to be cold. And, you know, the Packers defense is playing pretty good. How many points do you think Dallas can muster?
Mm. It's a good question because, you know, they're not the offense they were when they have Romo, who's, you know, I think he's underrated, I think, by a lot of people. I mean, this is a guy who is second in passer rating, I think, last year. Or I think he was first. I think Rodgers might have been second in passer rating. And he's been good for a number of years, but his collarbones apparently are fragile.
Made of paper.
Fragile, yeah. I believe, from the Christmas Story movie. Yeah. Let's put their points at – I'm going to put it at 20.5.
20.5. I'm going to take the under on that. I think I don't know if I have a good explanation for that. I'm just going to take the under. The number eight, always making Mike work for a little bit. Before the game, what quarter, halftime, or after the game, will they mention, do you know what I'm going to say?
Well, let me see. Dallas, it could be Ice Bowl.
In Green Bay, Ice Bowl. Okay. Well, where will they show the highlight of the Ice Bowl?
It's December. Oh, okay. Now, I don't have to guess that one because this is the tiebreaker, right?
No, that's not the tiebreaker. Okay. It would be from the start where they kick it off to the announcers, so not in the pregame, right? I think we established what pregame means. Before a kickoff, during the quarter, halftime, or somewhere in that halftime, or third or fourth quarter, I don't know, maybe after the game if you want to put it down. But what point were they going to show the ice ball?
I don't think I need to set a line, though, right? I mean, people just need to guess.
No, you got to tell what it is.
All right.
What you think it is.
I think they'll do it before kickoff.
Okay,
it's like a scene setter.
I think they're going to do it at halftime.
Right.
Like when they're coming back to Green Bay or before the kickoff, I think they do that. And then the tiebreaker, along with the Ice Bowl, is what do you think the temperature will be? And do they set the game time temperature as an official stat?
I think they do. I think I was just looking at that. Let me just double check here on the...
Did they do that on the Green Bay
yes,
site?
Yes, so it was 42 degrees... well, that was outside of Ford Field, but they do list the temperature and the wind direction. Oh, the wind direction, speed, and humidity, Dave. Wow.
We could do that sometime.
Yeah.
Now, do they do the temperature to the tenth?
It says 42 degrees Fahrenheit. Energy. Yeah, west winds at 11 and humidity 66% outside. But inside, Dave, it was 68 degrees. Very comfortable inside of Fort
Field.
Very
nice.
Yeah.
Very
and
nice.
70%
yep.
humidity. So a little bit moist inside, so to speak.
And this is a little bit unfair because, you know, it is in Fahrenheit. All the people that are listening outside the U.S. think in Celsius. So they're going to have to do the conversion.
They're going to have to go to the Google, figure that out.
But to be consistent, we were asking them how many yards is Crockett running for.
It's true.
You know, those that we're not doing metric meters or, you
this
know,
is America,
so.
Damn it. We are on the Fahrenheit system and on the imperial system. That's what we're all about.
If we want to play with a sport where they don't have a clock that winds down that people can watch,
exactly.
Or, you know, tie 0-0.
You
watch your football. This is our football.
That's right. American football, Dave.
So, what do you think the temperature will be?
Now, this isn't a line. Maybe people have to guess the number.
Oh, that's right. That's your guess. I'm gonna. Well, what? Help me with the guess. What's the temperature like up there?
Well, right now, I'm looking at my Apple Watch, as a matter of fact. It's 34 degrees on the Apple Watch.
All right. I'm going to say it's going to be 37 will be my guess. So apparently I forgot to guess my own line last week. I'm going to say – no, 37 is too. I'm going to say 34.
It's been a warm winter so far, only 0.2 inches of snow so far in Green Bay. And this weekend it was in the 40s, in fact, upper 40s on Saturday. So it's been good weather in central and east central Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's been quite a nice winter so
far. It's
been
El Nino winter, and we appreciate that.
And do you know in St. Louis next week it's going to be in the 60s?
I did not know that. And you know what,
nice.
Though? That arch will not rust. Stainless steel.
No,
it's fantastic.
It won't melt.
You know, it won't melt, no. If you want to play the betting lines, and we hope that you will, what you do is you send an email with your predictions, guesses, to Michael Miller, and you can get him at mitnomiller@gmail.com. That's our boy Mike Miller. He does the tabulations for us as a part of Packers Therapy. So we can talk about some of the correspondence we received. Pastor Kevin, of course, checking in with us as he does just about every week. I think that's a part of his weekly ritual. Probably while he's putting together his sermon for the week, he prays and then he hits us on Twitter. So we appreciate that. Brian Kay with a couple of tweets. Appreciate that, Brian. Richard checking with us. We also got Thomas. Where is he from? Is this Tom in Germany? I think it is. Yeah, Tom in Germany. We have so many Toms. I guess we actually have a Dick with Richard, and I don't know about Harry, but anyway, Tom was in touch. Tom Freeman from the West Coast. By the way, did you know that he has his own blog?
I did not
know
that.
I believe it's called West Coast Offense, I believe. Yeah, he's a retired lawyer living out in California. Let's see, who else was in touch? Oh, Chuck, back from Paris, our guy from Apple. Chuck P, as we like to call him around here. So he was in touch with us as well. And then a whole slew of people on Twitter. We really appreciate people getting in touch with us at Packers Therapy on Twitter. We have Tom the Glassman. I'm not sure Tom the Glassman. I'm not really sure where Tom the Glassman listens to us from, but he's a frequent tweeter. Damian Simmons, Ty hitting us again, Patrick Keough. We got the Borg. He was in touch with us. Someone named T-Hole, which may be a little bit uncomfortable, but T-Hole corresponded with us. Mike Kramer checking in. Richard, of course, with a number of tweets. And, of course, Captain Dave Moberg, our military attaché. Thank you for being in touch with us, listening to the podcast. We very much appreciate all of the emails and tweets that we get from around the world. It's great to share Packers football with so many fellow travelers, and Dave and I are very grateful for all of that. So, Dave, do you have any popular culture that you want to touch on before we wrap this one up?
I do. Just quickly, I'm still enjoying The Leftovers Season 2.
Now, did you see the finale? It was on tonight.
No, I haven't. I have not seen it, so don't tell me. I'm watching it very slowly so I can absorb each episode. It is the podcast I'm listening to that goes into detail. It's about as long as our podcast is, and they discuss every episode.
But ours is a lot better, though, right?
It is a lot better, but it's, because we have a better – it's called just post-show recaps, and it's on Leftovers. And they get into a lot of the religious overtones of things. Mm-hmm. Find it pretty interesting. Loving Leftovers. I'm really enjoying Fargo Season 2. But in terms of what I want to really talk about is I saw the movie Creed this week. I saw it Friday night. And loved it. I absolutely loved it. Are you a Rocky fan? Did we talk about this?
I'm not a Rocky fan. I have seen one of the films. I think the one, I think with Apollo Creed in it. I think that was the second one?
I'm sure. Yeah. If it's third. He's actually in the first four.
Okay.
He dies in the fourth one against the Russian. Spoiler alert. But, I can dub that out. But yeah, Apollo Creed, this is, Rocky trains Apollo's illegitimate son.
Nice.
And it's very close to the original Rocky. I think it's not as kind of all-star wrestling-esque that, you know, Mr. T and Hulk Hogan is in 3 and the Russian, Drago, all that kind of stuff is – I still loved it, but it's a little bit over the top, certainly. This one is a lot more realistic, a great boxing movie, great fight scenes in this movie. And I think the tomato rating is in the 90s.
Wow,
I think
really?
People, whether you like Rocky or not, I think it's a good movie. But if you like Rocky, you'll really like it quite a bit. It was a ton of fun. I haven't had goosebumps in a movie in a long time, and this one did it for me. If you like Rocky, go ahead and see it. On top of that, and maybe before you see it, I think I may have sent it to you. And forgive me if I mentioned this before, but there is a fake 30 for 30, kind of a mockumentary that ESPN does those 30
right,
for 30.
Right.
And they did one on the boxing match of Rocky and Drago the Russian, where they do a 30 for 30. It's only 5 minutes or so, but they take that fight seriously and talk about it. They get specialists to make comments. They'll say things like, "It's the most unbelievable fight I've ever seen. Literally 96% of the punches landed. I've never seen a fight like that."
Nice.
And it's so first, watch the first four Rockies. Watch the 30 for 30 mockumentary on Rocky IV. Then see Creed. And if you want to do extra credit, you could buy Rocky V and immediately burn it at the bottom of your grill, because Rocky V is an atrocity.
Is it a crime against humanity? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it is. Do not ever watch Rocky V. Rocky VI is okay. But Creed is very fun. I would very recommend it. And watch that 30 for 30. And email us when you see it, too, because I'm sure if you like Rocky, you'll think it's hilarious. It's a great, great, great thing. But
now,
that's my culture.
Cycling back to The Leftovers, have you gotten to the episode called International Assassin?
No, that's the next
one. Okay. That is freaky, and also in the finale they kind of cycle back to that. So
I will
be very interested to hear your take on International Assassin, which I happen to like a lot, but I think it was controversial for people because it's pretty out there.
Okay, I might I will definitely watch it. Either I'm going to watch it this week for sure, because I'm starting to pick up speed on it now. I don't know. The guys that did Lost made The Leftovers.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of the things that Lost, I'm afraid the unanswered questions that Lost left open is going to be also the same thing with Leftovers. But I think Leftovers isn't apologizing for it up front. I think it is like, just watch the story as we're presenting it and don't ask too many to wrap up stuff. And I'm already know that going in, and I'm just enjoying the ride. And it's, I don't know there's anything else on TV that I've watched that's similar to it. It's pretty amazing.
That's Damian Lindelof, right, is the main guy, the showrunner behind Leftovers, and he was also one of the principals on Lost.
Yeah.
And I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think he is in fact a theist. So there is a lot of it's not religious overtones. I mean, it's kind of overtly right there in your face.
Yeah, right.
And it does call into question, you know, this whole notion of belief. And some of it's right on the nose, and you kind of like laugh, and you know, because it is so obvious of what he's doing. But some of it's not, and some of it's more subtle, and it does raise a lot of questions. And you know, I want to flatter myself and say I'm a person of faith, but I know that you are. I'd like to think of myself that way. For people that are so oriented in their worldview, it's good to see watchable, engaging art that deals in some of these themes and begins to ask these kinds of questions. And it's thought-provoking in a way, I think, that leaves room for ambiguity. And for people that aren't necessarily theists but maybe are agnostic, there is room for them to sit at that table as well. And I think that's one of the real victories of The Leftovers. And I just saw, well, it might not just be the season finale. They say it could, in fact, be the series finale. HBO has not renewed it for a third season. But if it is the last in the episode, if it isn't the series finale, it would be a pretty good way to end it up. It's a show that I would be interested enough in the next thing that Damian Lindelof does. You know, I know some. It's not for everybody, but it's very intriguing, and some of it's a little ham-hocked. The only thing I'll put out new that we haven't talked about in our culture segment, have you seen Jessica Jones?
No, that's on the list, though.
I started watching it. I'm four episodes into it right now.
You're watching a Marvel property. I do not believe it.
Well, I
you didn't know that, did you?
Did not know it until this when I saw the Marvel logo and I saw Stan Lee was like an executive producer or given a creator's credit, you know. And I thought, but this, you know, this is so far for me, it hasn't jumped the shark through four episodes. I'm still with it, still believing it. I wasn't crazy about the first episode enough that I went to the second, and now that I'm in the fourth, I'm actually kind of enjoying it through four episodes. It isn't my favorite thing, but I'm giving it a try. It's not too much of a comic book, in my opinion.
It's definitely not a superhero, typical superhero.
It's a different
film
kind of superhero, right? Thing. I mean, it's sort of funny too when she refers to the other members. It's set in New York City, and there's 100 of these people with these special gifts, and she keeps on referring to, the guy, the big green guy, and the guy in the red, white, and blue. You know, without going Hulk or without going, you know, Captain America, she refers to him, just in this kind of abstract way. So that's actually kind of a wink and a nod, and it's fun. It's pretty well done, and through four episodes, I'm saying yeah. But I think this definitely has the potential for me to go, yeah, I'm good, thanks. But so far, it hasn't hit that for me.
Well, do they ever mention a big event that happened in New York City?
Yes.
And you have no idea what that is, do you?
Well, no, I they're referencing
it. Piece
it together. Every episode they reference it, and that's when the 100 got together and they pulled down a building, and and in fact that factors into this subplot that's going on. I don't want to say much more because you haven't seen it, but
I was referring to the Avengers. The first Avengers movie, there's an alien attack that they all, and then the universe as it carries forward, they always remember, like, hey, we got attacked by aliens. This is a big deal. We have to deal with this, and they're going to come back someday. And I just, if you didn't have
all
that
they're
context,
calling it is the incident.
Okay, so that I just wondered if you even knew what that incident was.
No, but again, it's obliquely called the incident, and they rallied around and saved New York City and. But apparently there was some collateral damage, and that's coming back to,
I see. Yeah. All right. You don't have to – enough said. But or as Stan Lee, I think, said, enough said. I think that was his take.
Well, we used to work with a guy that closed all of his emails with enough said.
That's right. That was
I right? And he's kind of a superhero. When it came to plan giving, he was a superhero of the first order.
He was, but I think he stole it from Stan Lee.
He certainly did. Well, okay, that's going to wrap Packers Therapy, and we'll have more inside jokes for you the next time we do this podcast. Is this the 267th installment of Packers Therapy? Is that possible?
Yeah. It's strange. It's almost as strange as a Richard Rodgers Hail Mary pass.
I know. Well, I'm not sure which is more bizarre, the fact that we've done approaching 300 of these over the last 11 years, or Richard Rodgers catching a Hail Mary for a 27-23 Packers victory. Our favorite team goes to 8-4. They reclaim first place in the NFC North. They have the third spot in the conference standings right now. If the season ended today, and we are on the 6th of December, is that right? Yeah. The season ended today, the Packers would be hosting the Seattle Seahawks in the playoff game. Of course, season doesn't end. We got four games left yet to go. Right now, Packers in the playoffs. Things looking a lot better today than they were a week or so ago. Packers got the Cowboys, though, next week. They play at home at Lambeau Field. When that one's over, we will be back to tell you what we think about that game. And until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.